Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. It's a WikiLeaks Monday, and 400,000 documents finally released late on Friday, poured over the weekend, and now we're beginning to get a picture of what they mean. They're all about Iraq. Last time WikiLeaks weighed in, it was about Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And the documents really showed a conflict in the chain of command over the sort of projection of policy inside Afghanistan.
And how it played out on the ground.
Exactly. And confirmed by later reports, from different sorts of sources, but still very, very controversial. This is a different story here, and there are really two big stories. The first one is a humanitarian plea from the man with the leaks. This is Julian Assange, the editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks.
Working with the Iraq body count, we have seen that there are approximately 15,000 never previously documented or known cases of civilians who have been killed by violence in Iraq.
Is that the takeaway from these leaks, these 400,000 documents, the new picture of civilian casualties and the impact of the war on Iraqi civilians, or is it something else entirely? A number of organizations were given access to the documents, including our partner, The New York Times. Joining us now, we're thrilled to have John Burns, New York Times London bureau chief, who actually sat down with Julian Assange in a profile as part of The New York Times reporting of this pretty big story. John Burns, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's first of all get the picture of what WikiLeaks claims these documents are. Does it focus our picture of the impact of the war on civilians in Iraq and the question and prevalence of torture in Iraq or not?
Well, if we speak in terms of what Mr. Assange and his partner organizations, not now speaking of the print organizations, but Iraq Body Count and others have accentuated, those 15,000 previously undocumented civilian deaths are something that they're very keen to focus on. But there is much else besides. And the general picture, and I think that they acknowledge this, is not that they have completely changed the paradigm. That rather what they've done with these documents is to give us much finer-grained detail of things that we already knew. They've shifted the statistics, there's no doubt about that, and not only on the question of civilian deaths, but they've given us a fuller understanding of things that I think I can say were pretty fully reported in the New York Times and indeed in other Western publications at the time. Example, deaths at military checkpoints. It's something we wrote about a lot. Sometimes random, sometimes indiscriminate firing on vehicles approaching checkpoints. There's a very startling figure in these documents of 680, as I recall, civilians were killed either by U.S. or Iraqi troops in vehicles approaching checkpoints. Only 120 insurgents were killed. Well, we knew that this sort of thing was going on. We wrote about it. The U.S. military command attempted at the time to explain it, but we didn't know the full scope of it. That's what they've done. They've given us a better idea of the scope of these things.
And I'm wondering how useful this is, coupled with the fact that there have been many complaints from the U.S. government that this possibly compromises sources and methods. It seems that this kind of information has less of a sources and methods compromising sources and informants inside Iraq than the last, because partly the time lag and partly the kind of information. Your assessment, John Burns?
Well, I think we'll have to wait and see. There are 400,000 documents, and Mr. Assange told me himself that he and his associates had only read 40,000 of them. What's the significance of that? Of the Iraq documents, the biggest knock against WikiLeaks was that they had not, to use a really ghastly term, redacted, that's to say censored, removed from those documents the names of Afghans acting as intelligence sources or collaborators, if you will, with American forces. And that, said the Pentagon at the time, put those people at risk. Now, Assange and his associates say that this time they've changed the whole procedure and that they started from the assumption that everything should be redacted and then put back into the public domain those things they considered safe. How Julian Assange squares that with telling me that he and his associates had only read 40,000 of the 400,000, I don't know. And we will see in the next few days. probably in the Pentagon's reaction, whether or not the same thing has occurred with the Afghan documents or not. But that was the principal, if you will, formal, official governmental response to the Afghan documents.
But as you say, we spoke with somebody from the UN who said he didn't find anything especially surprising in the documents either, which is what is essentially the case with the documents about Afghanistan. But and yet the release of them, although most Americans haven't read them, it has caused this incredibly passionate, sometimes a very aggressive debate to occur just around WikiLeaks and Julian Assange themselves. So is it maybe causing the argument over these wars to become more polarized without a lot of excessive information on the other side?
I have two things to say about that, and I'll try and make them brief. The first thing is that as the New York Times bureau chief, both in Afghanistan and Iraq, for some years in the course of these two conflicts, I approached them from a rather particular perspective. I wanted to see how much there was in the documents, how many themes, how many issues that we had missed. I felt, I must say, a little relieved to find, as I've already said, that there wasn't anything very startling, that there wasn't anything in these documents, at least thematically, if not in detail, that you couldn't have read about on the front page of the New York Times. And I'm not alone, us. I think probably the Washington Post and many other of the leading American newspapers. The second thing is that I personally have been subjected since the publication of these documents and my own story with Ravi Somaya, a profile of Mr. Assange, to an extraordinarily vituperative response, both in the comments that have appeared on our story in the New York Times, several hundred of them now, and also in the direct emails, which anybody reading the New York Times can send to a writer simply by clicking on the byline. I've just probably invited dozens or hundreds more responses.
Oh, yeah.
Overwhelmingly, caustically, vituperatively critical of us for writing this profile of Assange, which is judged to be uncomplimentary. Actually, in some respects, it's very complimentary in terms of the historical role he's played. But we do, I think, probably depict him for what he really is, which is a rather eccentric, capricious, high-handed individual, as are many people in history
who
do startling things. I've been a little bit, I must say, discouraged to see see that response. It may be a particular response of the kind that you see in the blogosphere. It may be that it's particularly people who have actively opposed this war who find that. But I find it very un-American in a sense. That
well,
people
are not
John,
can you hold on one second? That absolutely begs a question that I must ask you.
Yes,
just
of course.
Hold on for one second. We're going to take a break, shift to headlines here, and come back and ask John Burns, London Bureau Chief, for our partner, The New York Times, one final question on this WikiLeaks story. And at 15 minutes after the hour, we're going to get to the headlines in just a moment. But John Burns, I can't help but asking, is the reaction that you've gotten a sign that WikiLeaks is wagging the dog here, that they're using The New York Times to give them credibility, and you can't do anything about it?
No, I don't think so. I think that this is the pattern of this is very similar to the Ellsberg case of the Pentagon. I think that, you know, once we the opportunity was made available to us to be a partner, it would have been a strange thing indeed of WikiLeaks. A strange thing is indeed not to have wanted these documents. They are very important. I don't question that at all. I think that I don't think we're suborned. As a matter of fact, I think the fact that we write so frankly about Mr. Assange, in a way, is a reflection of that. Although that's not why we did it.
Right.
We did it because we thought our readers should know.
And there was plenty of reporting about Ellsberg in the Pentagon Papers case. John Burns, the London bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. We appreciate the candor. Thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.